A significant part of healthcare is provided by faith-based institutions and organizations. Good morning. This is Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Kyle Reese, senior pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church and board member of One Jacks.
And I'm Nancy Bronner, executive director of One Jacks, an institute of the University of North Florida. Faith Matters is WJCT's quarterly program, taking a closer look at today's issues through the lens of faith. Today, we'll examine the history of faith-based healthcare and find out how various faith groups are working for the health and wholeness of our community.
In hosting this show, it's our privilege to focus on the ways that faith unites us and brings out the best in our city. In the past couple of weeks, images of violence and racism have reminded us how we are different, but we commit ourselves to using faith as a force for good and healing in this community. One way that faith has manifested itself for good all over the world is its role in health and wellness. You can join our conversation this morning by calling 549-2937. We want to hear your views.
And here to help us understand the history and theology of faith-based health care are Dr. Diane Raines, Senior Vice President and Chief Nursing Officer for Baptist Health, and the Reverend Dr. Steve Goyer, Senior Pastor and Head of Staff, Riverside Presbyterian Church. Glad to have you here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Raines, you've done a lot of work on the history of faith-based health care. Nancy and I serve on the Baptist Health Social Responsibility and Community Health Committee, and we've explored that history. Would you talk a little bit about the historical role that hospitals and faith-based hospitals have played in health care?
Thank you, Kyle. So, faith-based institutions have really been the world leaders in healthcare over time. When you go back before there were formal hospitals, there were churches and faith groups who provided care, especially for the poor and the disadvantaged. During the plague in the Middle Ages, it was the faith community, the Alexian brothers, who stepped up to deliver care. And in our own country, hospitals really came from faith-based institutions, from almshouses for care for the poor. Early on, people with money got care at home. Their doctors came to their homes. But the poor and the disadvantaged went to hospitals. So you saw the faith community begin the hospital movement here in the 17th and 18th centuries.
Dr. Goyer, what is it about faith that compels us to care for the whole person?
Thank you, Kyle, for such a simple question. Let me first say thank you to you and Nancy for having this program, for supporting it, for One Jack's support and all that it does for the good of our community, but also for WJCT's willingness to have this program. Also, I want to say as the disclaimer that I'm no expert in any of this, but I do think faith matters, obviously, because I'm a pastor, and I think faith matters in everything. In terms of your question, the understanding of how faith supports our health and our health supports faith, I think is grounded in a biblical understanding of God's oneness. The Hebrew people were fighting a battle against all of the other religions, the gods of agriculture and reproduction, and their genius was understanding that God is one, and that oneness is this completeness, this shalom really is the word that the Hebrew text uses. And this shalom is about peace and about health and well-being, community and unity and a connection and oneness of all things as God is one. And so health is involved in that as well as community, as well as our faith and understanding. It's all part of the same package.
So both of you are involved in different aspects of treating the whole person. Diane as a lifelong nurse and chief of nursing, Steve as a pastor. So how would you define health as the absence of disease? So often in our culture, it's more entirely about the physical treatment. So I'd like to hear each of you talk about that.
Diane?
Okay. Well, the absence of disease certainly is part of a definition of health. But when you think about health and well-being, it really is, there's a physical aspect to it, certainly, and that's what we focus on a lot in trying to treat. There's a mental aspect to it, and we know that in our country, we have a crisis in mental health treatment and recognition of mental health illnesses. And there is a spiritual aspect as well. And in working with patients, I can tell you my personal experience is that you can see the spiritual aspect playing out many times in how people ultimately come to terms with their illness. No one likes to be ill initially. No one likes to hear bad news. But what you do see, people who have a very strong faith core, is they are able to move through some of those stages in a different fashion and look at health beyond what's happening to them at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Steve, as a pastor, you would be on the receiving end of some of the fears and concerns of your parishioners or those you come in contact with. How do you counsel people who, as Diane has indicated, perhaps sometimes receive the bad news of a health crisis?
Well, as Diane said, faith has many gifts that it offers to us in terms of healing. But there's also a sort of slippery slope about it, I think, that's important for pastors to understand, because it might leave the impression that if I'm ill or diseased, then I'm not faithful enough or good enough, or in fact that God is not God enough. And so I could either be guilty or I could be angry. And oftentimes I deal with that from a pastoral perspective. Mm-hmm. The underlying sense of that, however, I think is that people understand that there's a world and a universe much greater than what we can fully know, and it sends people in many ways sort of humbly to their knees in prayer and asking for help from not only science but also from a good, loving God.
Mm-hmm. Diane, Steve brings up a good point that faith is not always, or a person's view of faith is not always helpful in the healing process. Can you talk a little bit about how Baptist treats the whole person, and other hospitals in the area certainly do that, how hospitals treat the whole person to help faith be a part of the healing process?
Sure. And I think Steve's point is well taken. And what you don't want is for someone to feel that their faith has let them down, their God has let them down. And so dealing with illness and disease is a process. It's not one conversation, and what you need is support. So in addition to the traditional healers, if you will, in hospitals, our physicians, our nurses, our respiratory therapists, etc., we do have chaplains and social workers and mental health evaluators, and they can be very helpful to address those issues and help people begin to deal with the feelings, that some of the feelings that Steve brought up. So I've always been very thankful to be in a place where our chaplains are side by side with our other caregivers, because it's so important.
Well, we are talking with Diane Raines and Steve Goyer this morning about faith and health. We invite you to be a part of the conversation at 549-2937. We want to go to the phones now.
Good morning. We have Father James from St. Peter's Episcopal. Go ahead with your comment.
Thank you so much for taking my call. For about 30 years now, St. Peter's has tried to support an outreach center that it originally started as part of the church ministry, but which now it's its own 501c3. And I serve on that board. And one of the things that we've been looking at is working with emergency rooms in the area, because we don't have to turn away people according to the federal poverty guideline standards. And I know that some hospitals are under restriction and they have to do that. And we have 8 dental chairs, a wide range of medical specialists and professionals, everything from gynecology to podiatry. And I just wondered if there's a possibility for Caesar and God to work together here, so that we can take up the slack that maybe some of the ERs in the area aren't in the position to actually fulfill.
Thank you, James, so much for your comment and your question. Diane.
That is such a great example of faith in the community to promote health. And so thank you very much for the work you're doing there. And yes, many hospitals, Baptist included, want to partner with faith-based community organizations to extend that care, because while we certainly accept everyone into our emergency rooms, some people don't have primary care physicians. Some people don't have access to dental care. So that partnership is really important to us. And what I would say is if you're interested in talking more about that, we do have a social responsibility department, and we'd be happy to connect you to that.
Thank you. Steve Stanley Hauerwas from Duke Divinity School says that the issue of our time is how the God in which we ought to believe should make a difference for the way in which we understand the nature and function of medicine. And we're talking about partnerships between the faith community and the health community. Where do you see that happening in the most healthy sense of the word?
Well, certainly at the hospitals we've already mentioned in town, Baptist, one, St. Vincent's, others. In churches that see God's grace and God's loving kindness as an extension to everyone, with the hope and the focus of inclusion and accessibility, because I think that's one of the largest theological issues we are facing. I mean, the whole healthcare debate is about who gets access and how much is it going to cost. And from a theological perspective, God's grace and loving kindness extends to every creature, every part of creation. So if we limit healthcare, are we also limiting access to God in some way, like some old temple priest would do to those who weren't completely ritually pure? All of that enters into it. And so access to healthcare, I think, is a deeply profound theological issue.
And we're talking about faith-based healthcare, and so faith has substance. And from our First Coast Connect Facebook page, different faiths have different views on, say, reproductive rights and things of that nature. Diane, we talked a little bit about this prior to the show. How do you navigate those waters where a differing faith commitment plays itself out in an institution?
You honor the faith of the patients that you're working with. And so I think it is important that not every patient has faith, right, or comes with a faith tradition. And you honor that. Some patients come with a very specific faith tradition, whether it's how they are treated, what they're allowed to access or not. And you honor that as well. To be open to people's traditions and their needs and their beliefs, and you then offer the best you can up and allow them to make those choices based upon what's important to them.
And so you talk about folks who bring a certain faith perspective, and we've talked about ways that faith has it positively impacts and ways that it negatively impacts those who are not only giving care, but those who are receiving care. What are we shooting for? What is the definition of health? We've said it's not just the absence of disease, but what are we trying to accomplish in healthcare or faith-based healthcare?
I think it's important to differentiate between health and wellness. Shalom is the same word I used earlier for wellness. I've known many people who are facing health issues who have this manifest presence of wellness. And I've known many people who have no health issues, seemingly who do not manifest a sense of wellness. And so those two things, I think, are different in terms of the depth. Usually we think of health as being a bodily experience, but as we've been talking, there's this culmination, this agreement of health and body and spirit that come together, which we sort of lost during the Enlightenment as things became more and more specialized. The Hebrew scriptures help us understand, again, that wholeness of things. And we're coming back to it, I think, in some of the new work we're doing in terms of how a spiritual life, a prayer life, envisioning joy, gratitude, generosity, sort of the spiritual gifts actually does affect us physiologically as well as emotionally and spiritually.
Mm-hmm. Diane, Victoria Sweet, in her book, God's Hotel, says that her experience at Laguna Honda Hospital in San Francisco challenged her. She came in viewing the body as a machine to be fixed, and she replaced that with another image of the body as a garden to be tended. Talk a little bit about that difference.
That's a great image, and actually that's a great book, and I would recommend that to anyone who's interested in health beyond the traditional hospital. We know that when you've been in healthcare or medicine a long time, you see people who should not get better according to every definition that we have, every test that we've run, and they do. And you see people who you are certain will get better, and they don't. And you come to appreciate over time that we are gardeners. I love that analogy. We are gardeners. We are not gods. Our bodies are designed to survive and to thrive. And sometimes the best thing we can do is to get away from them. And sometimes it's to nurture them as they heal. The power of the human body and spirit to heal is actually beyond what healthcare practitioners can do.
Mm-hmm. And Steve, I imagine you've witnessed this very event that she's talking about, where there is for some, they would call it a miraculous healing.
I have occasionally seen that. I'd like to see more of it. But again, the question is, what does the miraculous healing look like? Are they cured of their disease? Some of the healthiest people I've known are those who are about to die. They've all of a sudden experienced something much greater than what they knew before. Mm-hmm. And they're asking for community, for family, prayer. And so that in itself is a miracle. When you're closed down to that most of your life, and all of a sudden you're opened up to something much greater.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part of the conversation with healthcare, and certainly the role that faith can play in that, is that there are those who tend to believe that death is a failure of healthcare. And perhaps it can be in certain situations, certainly, but it's also a part of being human. And so, Steve, how can faith speak to not only the healing process, but also the dying process?
Well, certainly in terms of the hope and the promise that death does not have the last word, many of our faith traditions live with that hope and promise. Certainly we as Christians do, that God has the last word, and that somehow in the process of dying, God can redeem it, we would say resurrect it into a new possibility and a new creation. That in itself brings facing death the possibility of seeing it as a passage rather than the end of all things.
We're talking with Steve Goyer and Diane Raines, and we invite you to be a part of the conversation. We're talking about the relationship of faith and health. 549-2937, we invite you to call.
And in a previous show, we discussed what is a good death. And Steve, you alluded to that, your experience of people who often are the most healthy, exude a sense of well-being at their approaching death. Talk a little bit about, in both of your opinions, from your perspectives, what is a good death?
I was talking to a hospice chaplain last week, and he was sharing with me that the four issues on every person's, not every, that's a hyperbolic, but most people's hearts when they're about to die, the first is the need to ask forgiveness of their loved ones. The second is to ask their loved ones to forgive them. The third is to give thanks for being in that family. And the fourth is to tell them that you love them. And to me, in a sense, that resolution of forgiveness or reconciliation at the end of things, that's a good death.
Diane, what have you witnessed in your nursing career?
Well, certainly I would agree with Steve's assessment, and I would say, you know, from a nursing or a medical standpoint, free of pain. Mm-hmm. People do not want to suffer prior to dying, you know, and quick. And that may sound like, well, of course, but we can do a lot of things in medicine to prolong death, right, as well as prolonging life. And so a good death is when the person has had a chance spiritually to do what Steve talked about and then does not have to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Diane, my experience with some who suffer illness is that if those around them are not careful, they become defined by that illness. I've been diagnosed, oh, this is Bob, he's a cancer patient.
Or
how can modern medicine and all of the things happening in healthcare, how can we humanize people so that they're not just defined by one tragic event happening in their life?
I think there's a lot of effort to do that, Kyle, because people don't want to be a disease, right? And initially, everybody is, as they accept it. What I think gets them through that is their ability to reengage purposefully in life and to demonstrate. So you'll see people perhaps who've had cancer who now raise funds for cancer, right? They've turned it into something more positive. And I think for those that surround them, it's really important that every contact with them is not about their illness. It's about their life and what they still contribute and how important they are to you in the relationship. That helps.
Diane Raines, Steve Goyer, thank you so much for sharing your views this morning on Faith Matters.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Later in today's program, we'll hear different perspectives on this issue from community members and practitioners of various faiths. You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Nancy Bronner, Executive Director of UNF's One Jacks Institute.
And I'm Kyle Reese, Board Member of One Jacks and Senior Pastor at Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church. We'll be right back with more Faith Matters.
Nick Hanauer has a message for his fellow billionaires.
Wake up. Wake up. The pitchforks will come for us.
Hanauer says America is starting to look a lot like France before Louis XVI literally lost his head. What should the wealthy do to ease income inequality before things get ugly? Nick Hanauer, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT, the Florida Humanities Council, and Flagler College for the Vietnam War and the Many Meanings of Patriotism. This screening of the PBS documentary, The Vietnam War, and group discussion takes place on September 6th at 6 p.m. at the Flagler College Ringhaver Student Center inside the Virginia Room. For more information and to RSVP, visit wjct.org/storiesofservice.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, September 16th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 event will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues. Learn new ways to engage students and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back to Faith Matters, WJCT's quarterly program exploring today's issues through the lens of faith. I'm Nancy Bronner.
And I'm Kyle Reese. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the connection between faith and health, and we invite you to be a part of that conversation by calling 549-2937.
We're going to continue our discussion about faith and health with a panel of community and faith leaders. Joining us now in the studio are Marty Goetz, CEO of River Garden Senior Services, the Reverend Dr. Marvin Zanders II, Senior Pastor, St. Paul AME Church.
Thank you.
And Dr. Mobeen Rathore, UF Health Department of Pediatrics and Board Member of Muslim American Social Services.
Marty, River Garden Senior Services is one of the preeminent care facilities in the city. Talk about ways that the Jewish faith informs this level of excellence in care.
Well, first of all, it's not just Jewish community. Not-for-profit care communities such as River Garden, and we're certainly not alone, precede the introduction of Medicare and Medicaid and the business of elder care. We're now into our 71st year of continuous service in the community. We're focused on the fifth commandment: honor your father and mother so that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God gives you. It is the only one of the Ten Commandments that actually promises a reward for the doing. So when you ask what River Garden does, we stay focused on our mission, our vision, and our values.
Dr. Zanders, you're part of a faith-based wellness initiative in the city with predominantly African-American churches that seeks to improve community health. Tell us about this initiative and what conditions in your congregation and community led you to start thinking about this work.
Thank you. We're part of a new initiative that's entitled the Health Smart Church Program, which has been recently funded by Humana, the Humana Foundation. And this program is designed to reach the to reduce the prevalence of obesity, hypertension, and strokes among the participating churches and communities. It's a collaboration of six churches that are in the Jacksonville Newtown success zone and communities surrounding these churches. What has led to this is the fact that a high number of our congregants have seen their health declining, and so we're beginning to want to address this by having them to take ownership, provide access to health care, and getting them the correct training and facility that they need to better themselves as they grow in faith, mm-hmm. they can grow in their health.
Dr. Rathore, Muslim American Social Services treats a wide diversity of residents in the city from many zip codes. What in the Islamic faith led you to provide care for those without access to medical care?
Well, thank you very much, first of all, for the invitation being here today. I think it's a basic part of our belief in Islamic faith, and as in other faiths, we are not the only ones. Serving humanity is the key. And as the Quran says, if you save one life, as if you have saved the whole humanity. So I think it was only natural, me being a physician and many other Muslims, physicians in town, it was something we could do to give back to our community. And I say community, I mean community at large. The Muslim American Social Service, or MASS, as we like to call it, serves all faiths. We don't even ask. And so I think, in fact, most of our patients are not Muslims. And so I think it is a part of our belief that serving humanity, serving the your fellow citizens is a key part of the faith. In fact, 9/10 of our faith is how you deal with human beings.
Marty, I know there are many challenges in healthcare today, but what are some challenges of faith-based healthcare in today's world?
That's an excellent question, Kyle. You know, the president recently commented on health reform. He said he didn't know it could be so complicated, so difficult. He was mistaken. It's really not that complicated, else the rest of the industrialized world wouldn't have already done it. We're alone here in this country. Yet we spend more money and we don't lead in a single statistical measure, except for the cost of care. It's a challenge. It's a real challenge. Nationally, we have been seeing not-for-profit, mission-driven communal agencies, such as mine, or just give it up because they have found it's been impossible to engage in the business of running some of these businesses. The Catholic community sold All Saints a number of years ago. There are other Jewish communities around the country that have given it up and said, we just can't manage this anymore. And when that occurs, whether it's a Jewish or a Catholic or a Protestant it doesn't matter. You lose a piece of your community and that which makes us whole. And it's a real challenge.
Dr. Zanders, talking about this, you know, that makes us whole, and talking about the initiative in your congregation, you're defining health as something much more than just the absence of disease, as we've talked about on this show. Talk about ways that you think this program will help treat the whole person.
Well, and one of the mottos, together we can live a healthier lifestyle. And so as you talk about healthier lifestyle, if your body is healthy, your mind is healthy. If your mind is healthy, your emotional state is healthy. So it helps to produce a whole person for our society, mentally, spiritually, physically, and emotionally. And so as Jesus talks about the healing of the total person, so it is not just the absence of disease, but it is the culmination of putting together mind, body, and soul. And this program brings that to bear.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. And we're talking this morning about the relationship of faith and health. Give us a call and join the conversation at 549-2937. Dr. Rathore, you have a unique perspective of being a practicing physician and also being a guiding force at the Muslim American Social Services Free Health Clinic. Can you talk about, in your experience, the faith perspective of patients and how it may either help or often, or perhaps, interfere with medical care?
Well, I don't think so. Faith ever in my almost 35 years of practicing medicine has ever interfered. Has always enhanced how I'm able to provide care for my patients in my everyday work. I won't spend much time on what I do on a day-to-day basis at Wolfson Children's Hospital and other places, but I will say this, that the faith part of it really encourages us and makes it easier for us to serve the uninsured of Duval County. And it's just so fulfilling to be able to, you know, my own yard man was hoarse. And, I said, what's going on with you, Johnny? And he said, well, I've been having this something in my throat I can't get rid of. And he suddenly we talked more. And I said, no, you need to go and see the doctor. He said, well, I don't have insurance. And he's a hardworking man, young man, 6 feet, big man, and he had throat cancer, so I was able to get him to Mass that day. But we have had so many stories like this, people, lawyer who got bankrupt because he was health. The healthcare system often does not take care of these people who are hardworking, good citizens of our country. So it is important that we have places like Mass and other We Care clinics. And by the way, we call it Muslim American Social Service, but we are supported by Baptist Health, one of our first supporters, not just financially, St. Vincent's. We have Jewish physicians. It's across the faith because everybody realizes that this is so important. And we just have to be lucky enough to be able to provide this to many, many. I mean, if you ever come to our clinic, there's no place to park. There's no place to sit. That's how much the need is. So it's very fulfilling for us to be able to provide this mm-hmm. service.
Pastor Zanders, we talked about access to health care and the ways that your congregation is partnering to do that, but it's more than about access to health care. It's access to healthy eating and exercise and sort of dealing with that whole person. As you begin this program, how do you meet those other critical needs of access?
Great. Thank you. And again, want to make sure we note that it's actually six participating congregations in this program that has been funded by Humana, which is trying to help us make certain that we will include physical activities, Health Smart events, weight and blood pressure checks. And the whole design of it is to get what we're looking for and calling sustainability, that after these subjects have moved through the process, that they are able to sustain on their own. And as mentioned earlier, being able to check numbers. A lot of times, persons are afraid to take charge of their health. So as they take charge of their faith through praying, meditating, reading the Word, this program is encouraging them now to take charge of their health, get your numbers, get your checkups, and then the physical activities of exercise, reading labels, just again, taking ownership. For the Bible says on many occasions, according to your faith. And so as they put in, and they will be able to get out the results that we are desiring.
Wonderful.
And we're going to go to the phones now. Thank you for holding. We have Philip in Lake City. Go ahead with your question.
This is Philip Mobley. How are you doing?
Oh, hello, Philip.
Great. Hey, I am now a minister in Lake City, Florida. And one of the things that I've found at the last couple of years being there is that the health outcomes, and especially if you look at the community county by county assessments, the health county outcome for Columbia County, and especially a lot of rural communities, it's pretty dismal. And people, they are very faithful. They're strong in faith, but they also are not necessarily practicing some of the best preventive types of procedures. Listening to Marty, I guess I got kind of concerned because I understand that it's hard, and sometimes we're giving up. I just wanted to know, can you speak to how we can actually take some things that are happening, positive things that's happening in metro cities and communities, and move them out to rural communities, because we need them badly, desperately.
Marty.
Thank you, Philip.
Philip, thank you. Thank you for the question. First of all, I probably need to make it clear, 50%, more than 50% of the residents we serve at River Garden are not Jewish. We serve the entire community. It's tough because it's tough to get physicians out into the rural communities. It's a difficult practice. It tends to be a difficult practice setting, and resources tend to be in short supply. Let me suggest this. I'm going to give you a Yiddish word. I'm going to teach you a Yiddish word. I'm not a Yiddishist. Shanda. It is a disgrace. It is just a disgrace that Florida has not expanded its Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act. And we're not alone here. It would have taken millions of Floridians who are disenfranchised from access to medical care and brought them into the system so that they don't have to face either the inability to access care or medical bankruptcy when they need that care. But to directly answer your question, I think we're looking at a situation similar to what we had with the HRO in Jacksonville. I think that we will see a more comprehensive approach to providing health care to all of us when the business community, including my organization, says that managing the burden of providing health care insurance to our employees has become overwhelming, and we need to find a way to share in this burden. When that point happens, I think we'll see movement from both state and national government in finding a solution to a situation that leaves us standing alone in the civilized world in failing to provide fundamental access to care. Mobeen was talking about that a minute ago, to everyone in our state.
Mobeen, you want to expand on your thoughts about
this? Philip, this is a great question, and you asked what can we do. I think I'll tell you one thing. I'm obviously not native from the United States. I'm an immigrant. I can tell you that about 25% of the practicing physicians are international medical graduates, and they disproportionately serve the rural communities and underserved communities. What you can do is you can ask our government to make sure to make it easier for those physicians to continue to get training and practice here. As you know, the recent orders to curtail and make it difficult for immigrants to come to the United States has significantly negatively impacted physicians also. And you will see this a problem. There's a shortage of physicians. And if these international physicians are not able to continue to train and practice, it's going to disproportionately affect the rural and the urban communities where these physicians serve a lot of their practice.
Can you, just to follow up with that, Mobeen, is there a discernible difference between, you know, you see children, urban city children, as opposed to those in the rural areas? What are some differences?
So there are actually more commonalities of the urban children and the rural children. There are differences. The commonality being access to care. Mm-hmm. We know that anytime there's no barriers to access to care, children do well. Children can get in the state of Florida, there's no reason a child should not be able to get some sort of insurance. Having said that, if you don't have a provider and a physician to take care of the child, there's going to be a challenge. So the healthcare issues in the rural communities and urban communities are often very similar. And, you know, people don't think of it that way. And it's access to healthcare. You know, we here in Jacksonville are very lucky that around Wilson Children's Hospital, we have created systems that would help children. But in the rural areas like Lake City and others, it's a huge challenge because there are no pediatricians there. So I think this is something we need to work towards. And, Philip, you should ask your representative to make it easier, not harder.
Pastor Zanders, I think one of the geniuses of the program that you and the other congregations are a part of is the recognition that it takes a community surrounding a person to do a lifestyle change, if that's what's needed, toward healthier living. How do you see the role of your church helping individuals who go through this program?
Well, I think, and also continuing that conversation about access, I think this program gives persons access to care that they probably ordinarily would not receive because of the strong partnership, so that treatments and referrals for dangerously high blood pressure and consultation on preparing for health care visits would help to provide that access to folk who perhaps are marginalized, least, and looked over. So we are excited about that being one of the added features of not just attending the program, but sustainability, but then also access, and then the partnerships with other agencies, such as, you know, food stores helping us to get fresh vegetables so that persons, as they look at their diet, can take some of the dangerous parts of their diets out and put good things in.
Mm-hmm. Mobeen, we have talked about that health is not just the absence of disease, but it seems like a lot of what we're talking about access is for sick individuals to be able to see a physician. But what systems are in place, or what do you see is kind of a growing edge so that the whole person can find health?
I think Marty alluded to that, and so did Dr. Zander. I think we are so expensive. Our healthcare is so expensive in the United States, in large part because we have not been able to focus so much on preventive aspects of it. I think we need to start that as young age. Give you an example. It should be a no-brainer, right? The vaccines. you know, that should be a no-brainer. Everybody should have access to vaccines. Now, for example, there's a vaccine for shingles. It's very expensive. A lot of elderly don't have access to that. So I think I'm just using that as an example. But there are other, having food deserts. Many of these things are social also. Mm-hmm. But we could do things for starting early in our children's lives and educate them and do the preventive things so they have the right eating habits, more activity. Obesity is an epidemic. I think we need to work towards things that are, the healthcare system should reward preventive efforts. Right now, we reward surgeries. We reward something, intervention. You know, you get paid a lot of money for putting a stent, right? But you don't get enough money to teach the children how you do good teach eating habits because, you know, that's not doing anything, quote unquote. So I think the preventive parts of the healthcare has to focus on the preventive parts of it. The triple aims should include population health and prevention.
Dr. Zanders, one challenge for those who have been diagnosed with an illness is that they can become defined by their disease. How can a faith perspective help humanize those with illness and broaden the definition of personhood?
Great. Believing that we are not defined by what happens to us as much as we are defined by how we respond to it. And so as persons begin to actualize their faith and move it from theoretical to applied, it begins to make a major difference in their lives and begin to help them escape that notion that they are their situation or their illness. Mm-hmm. So I believe escaping that is basically largely in part due to how one interprets not what they're going through, but who they are in their relationship to God being sovereign.
You know, earlier in the show, we were talking with Reverend Steve Goyer, and he made a comment that often in his ministry, some people are the, I hope I get this right with his words, but the most complete in their wellness right before they die. And he was indicating an acceptance and a peace that comes right during this process. Have you experienced this as a pastor? As we talk about the impact of one's faith on their health?
Certainly. And once persons have come to what, and I heard him use the word, I believe, shalom, a peace about where they are and their faith in God and end time situation, yes, there is a most completeness that comes over individual. But I also do believe that that peace can also come while here before end time or end life situations, when your faith in that higher being or that power is again actualized to believe that, as Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all things, and that word do, there's something I can do. So many times persons wait and want God to do everything. God's going to do some things, and we have to do our part, and our part with God begins to bring that peace and that salt, that serenity that comes.
Marty, this is from Harriet via email. She writes, it would seem that Obamacare and Medicaid expansion are crucial to achieving your faith-based mission. And her question is, does your organization educate the public about the importance of Medicaid expansion to your mission?
I appreciate Harriet's email. I'm here. I'm on this show today. And there have been others. I mean, UGreen from Baptist has been on. Folks from other hospital systems have been on. The reality is, in this country, we've done the heavy lifting. It's done. Older people have Medicare. People 65 years of age or people who are on disability or with end-stage renal, they have Medicare. The very poor have Medicaid. It's the working folks in the middle
who are getting destroyed here. They work. And people work and they can't afford the premiums for their coverage. Or when they can't afford the premiums, they can't afford the deductibles and the co-pays. That's not the fault of the insurance companies. That's the fault of our society. But I will say at River Garden and really in most nursing homes around the country, all 16,000 of them, most of the residents are funded either under Medicaid, those who don't have assets, or they're paying privately, or if on a short stay basis, typically under the Medicare or similar insurance product. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, nursing homes are not dealing with individuals who have no funding. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say this. The Medicaid program in Florida is not only underfunded to begin with, but it is about to become worse because our legislators in the last legislative session passed a Medicaid reimbursement plan that's going to move almost $100 million on an annual basis out of higher quality, higher cost nursing homes to others. That is a pet peeve, but I hope I've answered Harry's question.
Mobeen, let me just ask, part of what Muslim American Social Services does is helps the working poor, and you talk about a full parking lot. Tell us the hours of the clinic.
So we are open. Sunday is our busiest day. We are open on Sundays from 1:30, 1 o'clock onwards, and we literally are supposed to close at 5, but we don't leave until everybody is seen. It could be 8:30 at evening. And then during the weekdays, we also have, you can go to a mass clinic online, and you can really make your appointment there. It'll tell you all the available appointments. Just Google Mass Clinic Jacksonville and you'll find it. I think we will serve anybody who needs help. And I think talking to Marty's, we had a lawyer who had a practice, got bankrupt because of his health care. Mm. That should not happen. Everybody's not going to like what I'm going to say next. In the richest country in the world, healthcare is a right. It's not a privilege.
Amen. Amen.
Marty Goetz, Marvin Zanders, Mobeen Rathore, thank you very much for joining us today and sharing your thoughts and for the work you're doing in our community, all three of you. You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Nancy Bronner, Executive Director of One Jacks Institute.
And I'm Kyle Reese, Board Member of One Jacks and Senior Pastor at Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Faith Matters. We're committed to bringing you diverse opinions and perspectives on matters of faith. And we'll be returning each quarter with new voices to add to these conversations.
This show's producer is Karen Fagans. If you missed any of today's program, you can find the podcast later today at wjctnews.org. I'm Kyle Reese, Senior Pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church and Board Member of One Jacks.
And I'm Nancy Bronner, Executive Director of One Jacks. This has been Faith Matters. Thanks for listening.